That's very, very helpful. And the second one, Steve, is just as important, I think, the second attribute that you've got, and that is something around time. Can you explain that?
Certainly. Your money is infinite, so you can always go and earn more money. But unfortunately, you know, God's only blessed you with so much time on earth. And I was doing the message at church the other day, and I actually looked into the statistics that a child in Australia, and I've only got the Aussie data, sorry, a child in Australia born in the year 2000, if it's a male, will end up in current statistics living to the age of 79. And a female baby born in the year 2000 would live until they're about 82. So what does that mean? That means there's one certainty. You're going to die. Now, medicine is going to improve and cause us to live longer, which means that we're going to have more time than our relatives and ancestors. But one fact remains that at this point in time, we are all one day going to pass away. Now, some people have fears about that and insecurities and all the rest of it. But what I'm saying is that you need to realize that you need to do something with that finite amount of time that you have. A friend of mine, his name is Martin Ailes, has, for instance, a really good acronym or word for the word TV. Now, you sit down and you just zone out when you're watching TV. So he calls it the time vanishing machine, because what you do is you sit down and you plug out and then you get back up and life continues. And you might have lost an hour or a half hour or a night or a weekend if you're sitting down watching a game of ice hockey or a game of football or something else like that that's on the TV. Wow, man, all of a sudden my life's over. So if you can control your time and be productive rather than busy, now the difference between those two things is busy are people doing the things they want to do, not the things they ought to do. Productive is people doing the things they ought to do because it makes money rather than the fun things they do because it keeps them interested. So if you can control your time to get the best return on your money invested, then the way to do that is to be disciplined about not wasting time in the first place. To know that if you've got an hour a night, don't waste that hour a night doing unproductive tasks, watching TV, on the phone to your buddies, or anything else like that. Spend the time improving your own wealth creation situation. One thing that you have to remember is that employees swap their time for money. That's what a job is, right? You take a 40-hour working week, and what you do is say, I'm going to give you my 40 hours, Mr. or Mrs. Employer, and in return, you're going to give me a paycheck. So I'm swapping my time for your money. Investors, and particularly those interested in financial freedom, do the complete opposite. They take a big swag of money that they've created from their property portfolio, ideally positive cash flow, and say, do you know what? I am going to use the money that my property investing makes to buy back the time that I'd otherwise have to work in a job. So here's this whole idea of controlling time, and time is an investment stream. In the early days of your investing, you're probably going to do things, investment activities, that aren't going to provide you with an immediate dollar payback. For instance, when you work in your job, you know what your hourly rate is going to be. Even if you pay a paid a salary per annum, you can still work that back to an hourly rate. But as an investor, if you say, right, I'm going to take a day out of my job, go from 5 days to 4 days a week and spend that one day looking for properties, then you might have a day where you come back with nothing other than a learning experience. So you're not getting paid per hour that you invest, particularly at the beginning. However, you are actually employing this delayed gratification principle, knowing that even though you're not going to get paid a direct dollar for that time that you've spent, because when you invest in a positive cash flow property that pays you into perpetuity, pays you forever potentially until you sell it, you are going to end up with more money per hour that you invest than if you just got a once-off hit for the cash. Because the positive cash flow, once you find the deal and buy the deal and invest in the deal, is going to pay you over and over and over again rather than just getting paid once. So looking at your life at the moment, what investments have you got that pay you once? And what jobs and tasks are you doing that you're getting paid once for that you have to continue to do in order to continue to, say, tapped into that money, versus what tasks are you doing that pay you even when you don't have to be there? Now, some people call this whole concept passive income. I actually think that's misleading, because there's nothing passive about investing. You always have to have your finger on the pulse. You can't just move to Cuba and then get other people to run your property portfolio for you, because I've found that no one will run your portfolio better than yourself. Now, that doesn't mean you have to do all the work, because that's not control of your time. You need to pay other people to do it for you, but you need to continually manage those other people. And how do you pay those other people to do the work? Well, what you become is like the employer of your property empire. So you're going to have legal team behind you, an accounting team behind you. You're going to have a management team behind you, an insurance team behind you, a finance team behind you. So you're going to be like the CEO of this massive empire potentially. But if you sack yourself, or if you're the CEO that takes 6 months off a year, then don't be surprised when your team under you lacks direction and leadership, because you're not the one who's pulling everything together and making sure that the entire empire is moving in the right way. So if I was summarizing, Don, because I know we've talked about a lot here, control of time is about control of time before you invest, control of time while you invest, and control of time after you invest as well. So there's three phases to it.
Well, we talked about that, and I actually have a program for RAIN members on time management for real estate investors. And what it does is it boils it down to what are you really worth per hour. If you were to create this portfolio that you want to create of passive income and increase in value, what is it that you bring to the table, and how much is that worth per hour, per active productive hour? And there's people who are, you know, 3,000, 5,000, 9,000, 500, you know, the whole range per hour, what they value their time. And what I say is you pick that number and go through the formula in that program and see what of the tasks that you can delegate that are worth less than that hour. Because sure, you might be able to save yourself $200 if you go and paint the suite. But guess what? While you're painting the suite and getting a crick in the neck because the ceiling and you're doing and everything's dropping on you and you're having a horrible time, but you save yourself $200, somebody else who is paying someone to paint their suite that extra $200 has also found a deal that's made them $10,000 because they had the time to be out in the marketplace looking for the deal. So not only must eliminate these things called time vampires, which is the things that just go in and just suck the time away, and we all have people like that in our lives, and we all have tasks like that in our lives. Our job is to get rid of as many of those time vampires as we possibly can in our life. And like you said, time is the one non-renewable resource that we have. Money we can always attract and find, no matter if you're just beginning or you're a veteran. But you know what? You only have so much time. And sometimes it's shorter than you think. So you might as well focus on living today and doing what it is to get you towards your goal. And, you know, sometimes when you're doing that, it really pushes you out of your comfort zones. And I think that that's exactly what you talk about in number three, is it not?
It is. One thing I'd add just before we move on is that investors don't do what's most fun. Investors do what's most profitable. And of all the people that I've ever met when it comes to seminars and real estate functions and keynote speaks and all this kind of thing, I can quickly tell the difference between a property buyer or a property speculator and a property investor when you just listen to the words that come out of people's mouths. So someone say, "Oh, Steve, I'm renovating a property and I'm doing it myself." Okay, no control over time, because that's just like another job. In order to be an investor, you need to have some kind of system behind you. And that system needs to be a way where you use your profits from your investment to fund buying other people's time to do the work for you. Now, this might seem a bit funny compared with the first attribute that we talked about, which was controlling spending. Now, I just want to say one thing, Don, quickly, and that's that investors get paid to think. Investors don't get paid to do. So the controlling of the spending is about you personally, not from your investing side. When it comes to controlling spending from an investment point of view, yes, it's important, but don't become anal or really tight about the money. You need to weigh up, all right, I'm going to save $200 here, but it's going to cost me 10 hours of my time. I'd look at that and say, which one can I earn more out of? Can I then take 10 hours of my time and find another property deal that might make me 20 or 30 grand, or am I going to try and save $200? So you need to be smart about the way that you mix the time and the money oscillator, if you like, to try and get some balance across the two, remembering that investors get paid for their expertise rather than employees who get paid for their time.
There's one thing that came to my mind while you were talking about that, and that's a great quote from a wonderful investor and a very good friend, Arlen Dahl, and he says, "Will you please stop stepping over dollars to get to dimes? Focus on the dollars. Focus on the end game. That's how you will eliminate your time vampires."
Hey, Arlen's been a part of RAIN since I went out there years ago. He must be doing really well.
He just got his 10-year award. We give out a year for an award for members who hit their 10-year mark, and we gave out, 20, I think it's 26 or 27 10-year members, and he's doing incredibly well, as is anybody who is willing to stay focused on themselves and the commitment they've made to themselves and their family.
If people want to be successful, they've got to hang around successful people, and I don't know how much it costs to be a part of Rain, but if I could hang around investors who have been in the game for 10 years and just ask them questions and leverage off their knowledge, that's something that's priceless. So let's talk about comfort zones. And one of those comfort zones may be for someone saying, is it worthwhile renewing my membership or being a member? Now, comfort zones aren't comfortable. That's the weird thing about a comfort zone. And when you're in a comfort zone, it becomes easy to do nothing. Now, the problem with that is nothing that is the only thing that comes for free. So if you want something for nothing, then you can actually get that because you'll end up with nothing. So here's what I found about comfort zones. Investors who are in comfort zones are stuck at the level of justification why things aren't happening. So they say, you know what, Steve, I want to buy another 3 or 5 investment properties. I want to take my investing empire to the next level. But do you know what? I'm just too busy. And when you look at why they're too busy, they've actually worked themselves into a situation where it's easier to stay doing what they're currently doing rather than trying to learn something new. For instance, they're stuck in a job where they say, you know what, I don't really want my job, but they're afraid of what they don't know. So they stay in a situation where even though they're not happy, they feel comfortable or secure. They're not being challenged. I got a friend, his name's Brendan Nichols, and Brendan and I were recently trying to theorize about why so many people make limited progress in real estate and then seem to abandon it and just go back to the way things were. And, you know, we were bouncing ideas to and fro over the phone for an hour, and then Brendan goes, Steve, I've got it. I figured it out. And Brendan's been in the wealth creation game. Like, he was doing seminars with Robert Kiyosaki back in the early 80s. Like, he's a guy who's been around the wealth creation industry all around the world. He's spoken at all the big events all around the world. And he says, I've got to figure it out. People give up when the pain of going forward is greater than the pain of going back. And if you want to look at someone who's miserable in their job and try and fathom why someone stays in a job that they're miserable doing, it's because the pain of going and getting another job and the pain of dealing with new people and a new employer and the pain of dealing with a situation that they are not familiar with is greater than the pain of staying where they are. So the pain of going forward is greater than the pain of going back. So they willingly accept to remain in a painful situation because they're stuck in a comfort zone. And again, the listeners listening to this, what comfort zones are you in? Now remember, comfort zones aren't necessarily comfortable, that you are accepting because the pain of going forward and challenging what you're doing is greater than the pain of just staying where things are, the status quo. Hey, everything's comfortable, everything's fine, everything's secure, but it's not necessarily delivering the outcome that you want. Being uncomfortable creates opportunities for learning and profit. So what my business partner Dave Bradley and I regularly do is that we challenge each other when we feel that we're in a comfort zone. Dave will literally walk into my office or I'll walk into Dave's office, we'll shut the door, we'll say, right, we're entering the Teflon-coated room where nothing sticks. And I'll say to Dave, I challenge you, Dave, that you are doing the things that you are comfortable doing, not the things that are most profitable for our future enterprise together. So I'm wondering, are you doing what's most comfortable or what's most profitable? Hopefully that helps out. Any thoughts to add, Don?
Yes, and the comfort zone, and we've all heard it. People will come to you and say, you know what, I'm comfortable where I'm at. And these be 35, 40-year-old people who have, in essence, just given up about moving forward. You know, I'm comfortable what I'm doing, and you know what, I would be really, really nice if I created some more wealth and all that stuff, but you know what, I'm comfortable what I'm doing. And they will continue to create the exact same result. It's that old standby definition of insanity, keep doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. If you continually do the same thing, you will continually get the same results. I abhor comfort zones because what it does is it makes you complacent and it starts to make you a little bit soft in the coconut, and it really just starts to slow everything down And the world starts passing you by, and you'll sit in that comfort zone for 5, 6, 7 years, and you'll look back and you'll say, oh, I cannot believe the opportunity that was lying right in front of me 5 or 6 years ago. And then, of course, from comfort zone comes quite often some sort of self-loathing or depression where you kind of go, well, I missed it. I might as well just sit here and watch The Simpsons every night. And comfort zones really do hold you back. And I find that people will stay in a comfort zone until they have a compelling goal or a compelling personal belief that gets them up in the morning going, I really seriously want to create that vision that I've got here, this goal for me and my family, and I'm not going to let anything get in the way of that. That's when you start to see people become very, very good at real estate investing. And those are the kind of people that you hang out in, Rain.
Can I ask you something, Don? On average, I know you've got rain in various cities around Canada now, various provinces. On average, how many rain meetings would you have a year that a paid-up rain member could come to?
There are 12 in every city.
There's 12 in every city. Of the one each month, what percentage of members do you think turn up to all 12?
You would see about, at all 12, about 60%.
Okay, so here we go. My question for the 40% that miss one or more meetings is, what's your excuse for missing the meeting? If your investing success is one of the top priorities that you have, then that's very easy to say, but what does that translate back to in terms of your action? Now, I would suggest to you that if you've decided not to come to a rain meeting because it's more comfortable for you to do something else, then you need to really challenge that thought. Because if you're not at the meeting, even if you don't think you're getting absolutely anything out of the meeting, and I have to tell you, I'd be absolutely astonished if that was the case, the mere fact that you have gone to that meeting comes back to that equation of cost equals sacrifice plus delayed gratification. Because you've given up the time of doing something else to come to the meeting, all of a sudden, getting something out and back from the meeting becomes a whole lot more important because you have more of your finite time invested in it. I would make it a rule that it's not a maybe. You must be at all 12 meetings. And I'd even go up to Don. Now, he's going to be popular at these things because there's going to be people there. And I would give him a piece of paper that says, Don, I pledge to you that you will see me at all 12 meetings. And that way, you commit to yourself that you're going to be there. And that's your way of challenging your comfort zone. Now, I've experienced the same thing, Don, in my mentoring program that I run. Is it doesn't matter how many times people say to me, you know what, Steve, I'm going to send you an email with my goals, unless they actually do something to challenge the comfort zone, a good intention doesn't translate to actually action. So I would just encourage people that point number three, always challenge your comfort zone. And whatever you do, get to these 12 meetings. You are crazy if you don't attend. Now, of course, life's going to throw you up some curveballs. Your sister's going to get married. Your dog's going to get sick. You know, there's always going to be a good reason for not coming. But is your investing success one of your top priorities? And if it is, are you treating it as such?
Yeah, and you know what? You can commit to the 12, and that is your intention. Yes, your sister will get married, and you may have to miss one. But, you know, the reality is, it's what is your intention with what you want to do with real estate and what you want to do with your life, whether it's in real estate or not? Do you make commitments to yourself and then don't follow through because really no one's holding you accountable? Those are the kind of things that you really need to do to get be honest with yourself, to get out of your comfort zone. And then you start looking for reasons to do something rather than a reason not to do it or you can't do it, which I think leads right to your number four.